We were up at the DMZ a couple times and noticed the on the border where the North and South Koreans came together. We went through all this, walked through it and everything, saw what was happening. We can actually see North Korean soldiers over there, and they can see us. We never did have but little skirmishes every once in a while. Somebody got killed or because of this or because of that. It's all in the newspapers. But anyway, there was never rest in Korea against the North and the South, and there still isn't to this day. In Korea, I had my second airplane ride. My first one when I was a little kid, living on visiting my grandfather in Utica, New York, where we lived. But this one was a special airplane ride, since I was responsible for all the film that was played in the theaters in Korea as a part-time paid job. I had to go to Seoul to pick up the film and bring them back so we can watch the films for the next week. The troops to watch the films, that is. So we got in this little airplane called a Piper Cub, I'm going to call it. That's what you'd be familiar with. And that plane started to take off. And I'm sitting here minding my own business, watching that airplane pilot just tank and start pumping that plane like crazy. And I watch those houses get closer and closer and closer at the end of the runway. And I can just see this pilot just pumping that thing back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I had no idea what he was doing. And I can still see those houses getting closer and closer and closer. Finally, the plane lifted up off the ground. And I swear the wheels are going to hit the top of those houses, but we missed them by inches. Okay, we went to Seoul, we got our film, we turned around and come back. When we got out of that airplane, the other pilots come over and says, "What in the heck were you trying to do there? Were you trying to show?" He says, "That plane would not get off the ground. It was too loaded." He said, "We're lucky we are here today." Well, when I heard that, I almost had a heart attack, because that was the first time I thought that I knew that I was in any danger of getting killed or anything of that nature. And from that day on, I hated airplanes.
Where did you go next?
I went to Fort Huachuca, Arizona, which I dreaded going there because it was in the middle of nowhere. Nowhere. There was nothing around Fort Huachuca, Arizona. It was a single type organization there. Had all the single corps stuff. And the closest town was Sierra Vista, and I think the population might have been about 1,000 people or so. And then the next town was about 100 miles away, and that was Tucson, Arizona. But when I got there, I lived there for about 6 months, and it just grew on me, and I started to love the place. And when it came time to leave, I didn't want to leave. All I did there was take care of, I was the food advisor for the clubs and things of that nature. And then we moved on from there. I was, after Fort Huachuca, I was shipped to Germany.
This is your second trip to Germany. Was there anything different from the first trip to Germany?
Very much so. Very, very much so. I went to Germany to an officer's club. I was an enlisted man with a tech sergeant. When I went there, I knew nothing at all about what I was getting into. What I was getting into was the elite of the Army, and I had no idea that I was. And I had a just learn how to live all over and how to be a different type individual, more or less, because we weren't dealing with, you know, just everyday people. All of a sudden we're dealing with generals and colonels and things of this nature, and parties for dignitaries, meeting the dignitaries, including movie stars and such. And anyway, I went over there and I got in this club. And I did very well for myself in this job. That's where I made all my rank and went up as an enlisted man to an officer. But before that, we were serving dignitaries from every country possible that you can ever imagine. From Paris, France, to Italy, to the Eastern countries, every country imaginable. They had meetings of some sort there, month after month after month, talking about NATO and things of this nature. My job was to keep these people happy with food, and we did it. We gave them the best. We even had the dignitaries like McGee from the United States, and Chief Justice Spahn, things where we took care of all these people, and the colleges of the United States. We had them there, from the University of Maryland and Pennsylvania, all the big wheels. And we had to keep these people happy with food. My job was with food and parties and receptions and things of this nature. That was a big change in my life, and I met that change, and I passed that change. As a result, I was rewarded over the years by being made a warrant officer in the United States Army, which was great for me because I never thought I would be an officer. I served important people like the ambassador of the United States, McKee, I had from the United States, that is, and the Chief Justice Warren Spahn from the United States. I don't know if you recognize these names, but these were way back in the early 60s that this all happened. And I had the great General Stillman, all these big generals over there. Today they are history. Today, probably half of them aren't around because I was probably 15, 20 years behind these people. Today they're probably all buried there. And history has them in their books, and we don't hear about them today. It's just like Dole and all these people today. You're going to hear about them today, but 20 years from now, you're not going to even know who the heck Dole was. Just like Edie sitting here laughing because she never heard of these people. Well, to me, it was great. Did you ever hear of John Wayne? Well, I took care of him. Did you ever hear of Billy Graham? Well, I took care of him. I mean, these people are still living. And John Wayne, because of being a movie star, you'll remember those names. But the other names in the military and things, you just don't remember them. They're gone, they're history, they're in my little history book. From there, I went to Fort Benning, Georgia. I did such a good job over there as a club officer that they gave me a club in Fort Benning, Georgia. And here again, there's always something interesting in somebody's life that they can remember. Now, over in Fort Benning, Georgia, I think you all heard of the Green Berets, the movie picture, Green Berets. Well, in the opening scene of the Green Berets, you saw John Wayne get out of a helicopter, walk down, and go over to a headquarters, which was the headquarters of wherever he was, I guess in Vietnam. And he come upon a flagpole. Well, that flagpole was planted there overnight. It was put in the ground overnight. There was never a flagpole there before. And the steps that he climbed was Fort Benning Officers Club steps. It was not an office. It was a bar. It was a dance floor. It was a supper club. And they made everything look like a headquarters. It was very interesting. And old John Wayne walked through that place, and he took his little hand and made a square and going like he's taking pictures and things of this nature. He spoke to all of us. He was very, very nice. He worked all around the post, and my wife even got to see him. Also at Fort Benning, we had the Paul Newman story. I don't remember if y'all knew about the Paul Newman story. That was a movie where an actor jumped off the top of a water tower. I can't even think of his name today. The movie they made there was Dr. Newman's story. That's what it was. And I cannot remember what the actor's name was. But it was a very well-known picture at the time. Anyway, I met a whole lot of movie stars there because the place was used a lot of times for movies. And then from there, I went to Vietnam. Vietnam, that was a good tour duty there. We had a thing called the Tet Offense going on when I got there. In other words, that was the New Year's for the Vietnamese, and that's when they came and attacked us strongly, very strong, the Tet Offense. I got into an engineer group. You know, the engineers are the first ones in and the last ones out, and probably have more casualties than anybody else, and people don't even realize this. And the reason why they're the first ones in is to clear the property so the rest of us can come in there and set up camp and fight from those periods and things of this nature. And they're the last ones out because they gotta plow everything under it. And it's crazy world that we live in, the way things are done. Way done. I was in the field for 6 months of my time in Vietnam. My job was, I had 26 outposts to cover. And each one of those outposts was miles apart. And I had to get to each one of them at least once a month, if things went too hot. And I managed to do it most of the time, but not all the time. Sometimes they were under attack or things of that nature, so I couldn't get into them. I wouldn't want to get into them anyway. Neither would anybody else. So anyway, this one particular place we went to, it was in Chulai, and that was a very hot spot. And during the night, we had an attack, and the Viet Cong, or Charlie, we'll call them, just overran that position and went right on through, just shooting. Anybody that was in bed, they were shooting. And they get to the end of the perimeter and turn around and go back. Sometimes Charlie made it, sometimes he didn't. But if he didn't, if he made it, all well and good for Charlie. If he didn't make it, we know we had 10, 15 people that he killed behind him. So I lost 3 men that night when that attack. They were still in bed, never even got their shoes on. Before they knew it, they were dead. Those things, that's the way Charlie did. It hit fast and run. And that's the way it was in Vietnam, all over the place. You talk to them during the day, and they would kill you at night. I was one of the very fortunate ones. I could have been blown off the face of the earth many, many times, but for some reason I wasn't. I went up to Charlie Company up in the hills, and I went up to the Mel P there, and I had a friend up there. He was a captain. Well, we was up there that day. He took his Jeep, and he went down and inspected the roads and everything, and all of a sudden he heard this big old bang, and there he ran over a mine. Him and his driver were both killed in seconds. And that was a sorry day for me, because he was a very good friend of mine, and I did crack up a little bit when I got back to the base, but it didn't last long. Most times, it really doesn't last long, and things pass, and you see a lot of that stuff going on over there. The guy that was killed, his name was White, and he did get the Silver Star for that. He was on his second tour in Vietnam. He volunteered to do another tour. Just think, he could have been living today if he didn't volunteer to stay over there another 12 months.
Since I'm not from military background, what is the Silver Star?
It's right below the Congressional Medal of Honor. So it's a high honor that he was bestowed upon him. And he was a good officer, a real good officer. I can remember riding down the street with my arm out the window, going through, Fubai. And I had my elbow sitting on the window, and all of a sudden, here comes this motorcycle going past me 1,000 miles an hour and just try to grab my arm and my watch right off my hand. He didn't get it, though. I was lucky. And the worst part of it all, if we tried to do anything, we were the ones who were going to get in trouble, not them. I also can remember when the bus parked in Fubai, loaded with troops, and I guess it was a lucky thing that all the troops stopped, and they got out of their buses, and the next thing you know, we had a big explosion, and the bus was blown apart, and nobody was killed, only because the timing was right on those people getting out of the buses. If they kept on going and didn't stop, they'd probably all gone today. But that's the way that war was. It was a crazy war. It was really a crazy war. I had my buddy Mike. He was over there. He was a helicopter pilot. And we served many years together in the United States and overseas. Anyway, he used to go out with this helicopter, and he got involved in this orange spray that they talk about so much in the news and everything, and he died of cancer at the age of 50, and it was caused by the Vietnam War long after he came home from an orange spray that they used over there to kill all the trees and everything. I'm sure that you read about it in the newspapers. We came under many attacks over there. Charlie would sneak up at night and drop in about 15 or 20 mortars and then run away. Well, soon as that alarm went off, we just hit the bunkers. That's all we could do, because we didn't even know where Charlie was. And we hit those bunkers as fast as we can get there. Unfortunately enough, one of them never had my name on it, so that's another reason why I'm still here.